Amending the U.S. Constitution was not intended to be easy. It takes approval by two-thirds of the House and Senate, and then ratification by three-fourths of the states. Scores of amendments have been proposed over the years, but few proposals ever make it. Michael Seidman, a professor at Georgetown University's Law Center, says the amendment process is often misused.
There have been over 1,000 amendments proposed in our history. There are only 27 amendments in the Constitution. Often they fail for the reason I think the Equal Rights Amendment failed, and that is, it sounds like a good idea at the time, but nobody can quite figure out what it actually means. And I think there's a similar problem with the Gay Marriage Amendment. The people who wrote it can't agree among themselves as to what it would actually do. And usually the American people have had the good sense not to put in the Constitution something that they don't really know what it is meant to accomplish or what it would accomplish.
If they were to do it right, how should the language read?
I think what some people want to do is just to make unconstitutional the use of a word, the word marriage. If you want to do that, you write, marriage shall be a relationship between a man and a woman. But some people oppose marriage, but they don't oppose civil union. If you want to bar civil unions, then you would have to figure out, well, what sorts of relationships and sorts of things do you want to prohibit? The Musgrave Amendment, which is the one that most people are talking about, says, well, the law shouldn't be construed to provide the incidents of marriage. Well, what are the incidents of marriage, okay? The amendment doesn't say that. So if it actually got enacted into the Constitution, it would lead to just what people say they're afraid of, rampant judicial activism, trying to figure out what it means.
What role does the president usually play in supporting a constitutional amendment?
Well, the president has no formal role, but obviously the president does have some political role. In our past history, it's sometimes been the case that presidents have used the amendment process as an excuse for not doing other things that they're under pressure to do. So, for example, Ronald Reagan, instead of proposing balanced budgets, proposed the balanced budget amendment. And I think many people suspect that George Bush's support of this amendment is motivated by a similar set of concerns, not to say that his concerns aren't also legitimate on the merits.
Balanced budget amendments supported by a lot of members of Congress who are still around and are now seemingly comfortable with deficits.
It does seem that way. I guess another point that I would mention, you know, people just have to think about what the effect of what they're doing is. And one very odd aspect of the Gay Marriage Amendment, the amendment doesn't do anything about the Supreme Court's decision last term in Johnson versus Texas, which struck down the Texas sodomy statute. So if the amendment were to be enacted, you'd be left with the following situation. Casual sex with complete strangers would be entitled to absolute constitutional protection.
But marriage,
a committed relationship involving love and commitment would be absolutely constitutionally prohibited.
Is there a way to write language that will be satisfactory to everyone and not be challenged?
There's not a way to write language that is satisfactory to everyone because it's simply a fact that we in this country are divided about this issue. I think the mistake people make when they propose constitutional amendments is that they think that somehow we can just avoid the hard work and unpleasantness of disagreement by magically writing a constitutional amendment that's going to solve the problem.
Michael Seidman, a law professor and a reporter for the Constitution Project's Initiative on Constitutional Amendments.